Welcome to Pilates Elephants. I'm Raphael Bender. Today I want to discuss the question, do we underload our clients in Pilates? Now, really, I want to discuss like, do we underload clients in just resistance training in general? I think Pilates, in my mind, is a type of resistance training, using springs or body weight for resistance, sometimes bands, sometimes light weights. And, there are other forms of resistance training, but the basic concept is we're loading muscles to induce strengthening and we're stretching muscles to induce increasing flexibility. And that's basically resistance training. So do we underload our clients? Well, in my view, yeah, a lot of the time we do. And I think there are two sort of main things I'd like to discuss in relation to this. And the first one is, are we actually trying to strengthen people in Pilates? Is that truly like something we're trying to achieve? Is that something we think is important? And secondly, if we are trying to strengthen people, what's required and what are we currently doing? All right. So, if you've been listening to this with the sound up ever before, you know that I like strengthening. And I like it because there are just so many health benefits, both physical and mental health benefits to strengthening exercise, that I just think you'd be absolutely bananas not to do it for yourself, considering the paltry amount of time and effort required and the outsize benefits in terms of lifespan extension, health span extension, mental health, cognitive health, the list, functional ability, the list goes on. So we know that, if those who are stronger live longer, and I do hear people say a lot in relation to Pilates, the word strengthening. But on the other hand, I also, on occasion, have had, very respectful disagreement from people saying, it's all very well that, we need to do A, B, and C to strengthen, but that's actually not one of my core goals when I'm teaching my clients in Pilates. I'm working on body awareness and alignment and breath and different things like that. And, with respect, I think, I'm delighted that those people are moving. I think it's infinitely better that they're moving, doing alignment and breath and all the rest of it, compared to not moving. So I'll take it and I'll give you a high five. But as I've said before, and as I'll say again, as long as you're moving, why not move something heavy and get all those extra super duper health benefits, like living longer and being more functionally able, So, I guess if you're still listening to this, you may likely be a convert to strengthening, because otherwise it would probably drive you batty hearing me go on about it so much if you don't agree. But if you don't agree and you still like listening to this podcast, my hat's off to you. Because not many people in this world at the moment that can take enjoyment from spending time with someone they don't agree with. So good for you. And I enjoy having you with me. But back to the main topic at hand, if we are aiming to strengthen with Pilates, and I believe that that is a core part of our job description, is strengthening people. I think the bottom line is we deal in physical exercise and we're exercise professionals and we should be doing everything in our power to make our clients as healthy and happy as possible. And that should include strengthening, because strengthening makes people healthier and happier. And it's our skill. That's what we know how to do. So I think it's our moral obligation to strengthen people when they come to us for strengthening. All right, so how do you strengthen people? Well, you need to bring their major muscle groups to moderately close to failure. That's where they cannot complete another rep in decent form. And by decent form, I don't mean like 100% perfect. I just mean like better than 50% perfect. So if we need to get to within, well, in order to, you know, maximize strengthening, you need to get within like 2 or 3 reps of failure, most probably. So you need, that's pretty close, right? You'd be definitely slowing down. Like if you imagine doing as many push-ups as you can, by the time you get to the second or third last one, you're going pretty slow, right? So that's pretty heavy. That's pretty hard. On the other hand, that's to maximize your strengthening benefit. Whereas if all you want to do is get some strengthening benefit, well, you can go a bit further away from failure and still get stronger. You just won't get as much stronger. So if you stop like 5 reps from failure or 8 reps from failure, you will get, you know, less benefit, but still some benefit. And if you go 10 reps from failure again, you'll get less benefit again, but probably still some small amount of benefit in terms of strengthening. But if you start to go like, you know, more than 10 reps from failure, you're starting to significantly diminish the amount of strengthening that you're going to achieve. So, you know, how do we know if we're achieving strengthening in any given set, you know, in any given exercise? Well, if you get to that point where you're starting to slow down involuntarily, like you can't move any faster because you're fatigued, then there's a pretty good chance that you're going to stimulate some strengthening. And if you're still moving at top speed and the load still feels relatively light, even if it's burning, yeah, you may not be stimulating much strengthening. So typically, you know, how far do we go from failure in Pilates? Well, I don't know, obviously, because I haven't done your class. But on average, I would say a long way from failure. Now, I don't have any data on Pilates because I don't think there is any, but I have some data on strength training in gyms. And so this was a meta-analysis that came out in 2022 by James Steele from Solent University in the UK. And he meta-analyzed with a couple of other colleagues 18 studies with 360 participants. And they looked at studies where participants had been doing like a strength training study, and where the researchers measured their one rep max, so the maximum they could lift. And then they also got the participants to self-select a load to do at least one exercise, and then they measured their 1RM in that exercise later or earlier. And then they got them to do 10 reps, mostly, sometimes it was 15 reps, mostly it was 10 reps in most of the studies of this exercise, all right? So they said, like, you're going to do 10 reps of chest press or leg press or whatever it might be. Choose your own weight, right? So they would jump on the machine and put the pin in at a certain point, and you choose the number of plates they wanted to lift, and they would do their 10 reps. And then the researchers measured, you know, what weight they chose, and also measured what weight they could maximally lift. So they measured their one rep max. What they found was, on average, the participants selected a load that was 53% of their one rep max. And it was pretty tight intervals, 49 to 58%. So like no one selected above 58% of their one rep max. So about 53% of their one rep max, and they did 10 reps. All right, well, you know, you're thinking, yeah, so? Well, here's the thing, dear listener. According to recent systematic reviews by Nutso et al. From 2023, maximal number of repetitions of at percentage of one repetition maximum, a meta regression and moderator analysis. At 55% of your 1RM, you can do like 21 plus reps. So these people, on average, were selecting a weight that they could do like 21 or more reps and then doing 10 reps. So on average, they're stopping like 11 plus reps from failure, which is right at the borderline of whether you get any benefit or hardly, you know, no benefit or a very small benefit in terms of strengthening. Because the vast majority of the benefit in terms of strengthening accrues as you get within, let's say, you know, 6 reps of failure. And then up to about 2 to 3 reps of failure, you probably still get more benefit. But 10, 11, 12 reps from failure, you're probably getting minimal to no strengthening benefit. And these are the people who go to the gym twice a week for 5 years and are still pushing the same load on the chest press. And dear listener, and I say this with love, they're the people in your class who've been there for 3 years and are still pushing the same load in their open hugger tree or in their front rowing or in their footwork or in their lunges. And if your clients aren't able to add more load over time, it means they're not getting stronger. Because that's really the definition of getting stronger. You can add more load. So I think, you know, what are the takeaways for this? Well, I think we can assume that if people who go to the gym underload themselves, then I think we can pretty safely assume that the average Pilates client underloads themselves. Now, notice I said average. Dear listener, this may not apply to you. If you're one of those crazy kids who puts heavy dumbbells in the hands of your clients, goes around and adds a spring when you see them and they look like they're not working very hard, well, good for you. My hat's off to you. But if you're kind of watching your clients pick up the smallest possible pink dumbbells and do their footwork on 2.5 springs yet again, and sort of thinking like, gee, I wish you'd pick up the heavier ones, but not saying anything, well, now's your chance. And I want to encourage you to encourage your clients to go a bit heavier. Now, there are some exercises in Pilates where it's not the point. Right. So if you think about like the original front rowing or back rowing, it's like, yeah, don't put on 4 springs and do that because it's kind of an artistic, stretchy thing and your arms are going back behind your back and all this kind of stuff. So certainly there are some exercises in Pilates that don't lend themselves to heavy loading, but there are a lot of exercises that do lend themselves to heavy loading. I'm looking at you, long stretch. I'm looking at you, lunges. I'm looking at you, chest expansion and reverse expansion. I'm looking at you, side bends and snake and twist, control front, Russian splits. Okay, we can load these a lot. And sometimes we add load by adding springs and sometimes we add load by taking springs away. But either way, we can add a lot of load to these exercises and we can get people to within that 2 to 3 reps of failure where they start to slow down. All right, dear listener, I think the big takeaway here for me is if you let people self-select loads, they're probably not going to get much stronger, the vast majority of them. So let's not let them self-select loads forevermore. Let's start them maybe where they're comfortable and then gently nudge them forwards to the edge of their comfort zone and maybe just a little bit past it and then maybe even a bit more past it. Because all the magic happens out there. All right, dear listener, hope you found that intriguing. I'll add those studies into the show notes. Have a read and much love, and I'll see you in the next one. After two exercise science degrees and over a decade and a half of reading research daily, I've condensed all the current science on rehab into a program called the Clinical Exercise Specialist Rehabilitation. Inside the program, I'll teach you to do three things. One, deeply understand how the body works. Two, confidently and expertly rehab literally any client. And three, get results for your clients. So ultimately, your clients tell their friends and you become known as the go-to expert in your area. This program is completely unlike any education you've done before, even if you've studied with us before, because of the way we've built the learning design. It's an online, flexible, skill-based learning program, which means you keep doing the skills under supervision until you're good at them. It's more of a mentorship model than a traditional course model. So rather than rushing through the content and having sort of one go at everything, you actually just practice live and we give you feedback and guidance and we dialogue and explore concepts together until you're highly skilled and confident. We just keep working the material until you get it. It's not rushed at all. It's not about ticking off the content. It's about engaging, practicing, and applying it until you own it. This is a life-changing program, not some weekend certification. I've put my heart and soul into building this, and I can't wait to share it with you and help you discover your genius for anatomy and rehab. Now, because of the highly interactive nature of this program, we're only taking on 12 students worldwide. The program starts on March the 1st, and the first 12 qualified people to apply will be allowed to enroll. So if you're interested in learning more, click the link in the show notes and download the course guide or go to breathe-education.com and click on the clinical certification menu in link in the top menu. That's breathe-education.com and click on the clinical certification link in the top menu.